Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The best, the number one, greatest innovation the game has brought in, 40-20.
It's the 40-20. Phil's gone. He's gone. 40-20 Christmas podcast. Phil's got a jumper on. We've got a mince pie. What's going on, Phil? What's going on?
I've got Christmas jumper on. I was just showing off.
It looks a bit like that rugby league shirt we've got there. Isn't that really, isn't it? What's this? Wales rugby league. Maybe they should bring out that Wales rugby league shirt.
Wakefield wear a kit a little bit like this for one. Boxing Day.
Yeah, one of the before pay per view had been invented, so we didn't have to pay to sit at home and watch it. But you know, probably worth thousands of pounds now. Well, they would be. Phil, as soon as I don't turn up, the studio's full of people. What's going on?
It's our Christmas party.
Where's my invite? What happened?
Well, you were so busy putting our name forward for a podcast nomination that we're all here waiting for you.
Oh.
Watch the party has started without you.
James Charles hidden by a mince pie.
I would say improved by... Like a mince pie.
I feel very overwhelmed because I am the like I write the TV column in the magazine, but I'm like not even the best TV reviewer in the magazine, Martin. So Martin Kellner's here from 40-20 magazine and everything else.
You are. I sort of review my barber rather than reviewing the TV or review something I've seen on Twitter. Very rarely review the TV because I know you do it, and thank you for the mention. I appreciate it.
You do it on the radio. You did it in the papers for years. I feel like I need some tips from you, but we'll probably come to that later if we get the time. And Peg Alexander, how did you end up here?
Very good question.
She's come to talk to Phil about a book, and just happened to pick today, or I picked today. So she wanted to be introduced to Phil.
We brought her in for her rugby league knowledge, which is on a par with the rest of
us. Which is, I only have one rugby league story and we'll save it. So the nearest I get is that I grew up in Haddingwood. Does that count?
I think so. I mean, this is not going to be a rugby league show, is it, Phil? There's nothing to talk about in rugby league. We could talk about the world rankings, but they're a bit boring, aren't they?
I think the only thing to talk about is Jack Welsby re-signing for St Helens, which is great for the game over here. Typically, the Aussies are saying that he's got a lack of ambition not to play in their competition, but captain of England in two of the three tests, 22 years old, won just about everything. To recommit to playing over here is fantastic. Almost as important as the news that St Helens have decided to renew their dual registration agreement with Swinton.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, so
you never know, Jack Welsby could be turning out for Swinton.
What I want to know if he is Mark Welsby's son, and I've put this on Twitter before now, because, it's like Mark Welsby played for Swinton for a while, and played for Wigan for a bit. And I can't, you think somebody on Twitter, somewhere, with all my followers, will come and tell me, is he Mark Welsby's son?
Well, everybody has a quiz at Christmas. Ours is, who is the father of Jack Welsby?
Yeah, and does he know?
That was often labelled asked at me, do you have a father? In a different sense.
So how are we all preparing for Christmas? That's far more important than...
Obviously, this is part of the podcast, so it's just...
This is how we're wrong.
Right. Well, I'm preparing for Christmas by having all my children. I was only four of them, but, it's still a fair number. And various partners at our house. So my wife...
Various partners of your children, as opposed to your various partners.
Yeah, that's... various partners of my children. at the house, so basically my wife is preparing the fatted calf for everybody. vegan, vegetarian pavilion, and she'd been going to make a rice pie for the vegan in the family. Rice pie, that's too much, really. It's, you know, but, there you go.
Well, that's pie tinsel. You've got a huge dining table.
Well, we've got an extender, you know, like the classic, you know, thing that's arriving tonight. That's coming from Stephen's mum and dad. They're bringing that round, so that'll be extending the table to get into the drill. So I've got my parents, Stephen's parents, my brother, and Stephen and I. So it'll be a nice Christmas day.
And you won't have to worry about officiating Boxing Day.
Yeah, Boxing Day was always a sort of an option for full time referees. If you wanted to officiate on Boxing Day, you could. And those who really wanted the cash in hand. Stick my hand up. So Ben Taylor always likes a game on Boxing Day.
Hasn't been announced yet who the referee is.
So whoever runs out on Boxing Day, you know that they're going. A, they don't want to be in the house with all the rest of the family, and B, they want the cash in the pocket.
Yeah, that works well. I mean, it often works like that in radio. I bet you've worked every Christmas, Ben.
Oh yeah, loads and loads. Yeah.
And at the BBC, we used to get like double pay. But at Talk Sport, you get the same scabby fee that you get the rest of the year.
Is that the same fee that we get for doing this podcast?
You've got an inch.
But yeah, so at Talk Sport, I didn't put my hand up to do Christmas Day this year. They'll probably get Simon Jordan in to do it at double his already extensive thing.
I was going to say, rather scurrilous, the best of Simon Gilbert, but what they'll do after 10 minutes.
Yeah, well, you could say that. I couldn't possibly comment on that. Yeah,
I couldn't say that when he works for the other company I work for, Phil, so you don't get me in trouble.
Not away with it. But have you got a million people around in your home?
No, I'm going away, actually. I'm going to my brother's. You know what? This is typical of me. I do quite a lot of these kind of panel things and contributor things. And it's amazing the stories that you drench up from somewhere in the brain. So I'm going to my brother's house. And here is a very vague rugby league connection, because I think he did the music for one of the Rugby League World Cups many years ago. I'm vaguely thinking that. We'll have to check it out which one it is. So I'm going. I'm going to his house with his family, and it'll be lovely.
What was the tune? I mean, do you remember?
You know what? I can't remember. I think Carol Decker sang it. Was this ringing the bell with anybody? Or is it a complete figment of my imagination?
Sounds very rugby.
Yeah.
It's a quiz, isn't it? That's just
two questions.
That's two questions.
Neither of which we know the
answer. No, I'm actually sure it's true. Never let the truth get in the way of a good story, is this then?
You mentioned television. I'm going to throw something in here, probably for Martin to kick it off with.
That's fine.
Spotty, is it still relevant? I mean, we had all of the Twitter.
No, I mean,
Spotty of rugby league. We only got 15 seconds. I don't know how much they think.
Well, they never did used to get much, did they? I mean,
Derek Belmont had his leopard suit on. What do you want?
Yeah, what more? No, I think Spotty is too much like Strictly Condensing. I mean, it's all about the glitz now. It's a sort of standard BBC end of year. I mean, they do it very well in terms of the glitz, but very little to, I don't think any sports fans. I mean, if you were a true sports fan, Chelsea versus Newcastle was on TNT, because it was Carabao Cup. So that was on there. You really wouldn't. I didn't stick with. I watched the start. I watched Spotty mainly for satirical purposes. I'm sure you do, Richard. And then so watched a bit of that. Then switched over and watched the Chelsea match. Which was quite exciting because they equalised later on. Kieran Trippier, who seems to make a habit of now, makes. Can we talk about football? We can talk about football, can't we?
Talk about whatever you want.
Who's making a habit of making disastrous mistakes towards the latter end of matches? So then I turned back not to see who won it, because she was 1-10 to win it. Mary Earps,
Mary Queen of Stops.
Mary Queen of Stops, if you like. I don't see that. It's. I always think, I don't want to get old Joey Barton about it, but, she was on the losing team. And not just a losing team. We lost fairly handsomely to Spain. They beat the hell out of us, really, in that.
She's fantastic, though.
She's fantastic as a person. Yeah, she's a personality, I'll give her that.
Yeah.
But so is Ronnie O'Sullivan. And Ronnie O'Sullivan is a champion. And he wasn't even. Why should the BBC decide that we're not allowed? We're not allowed to vote for. What are you saying? Snooker's not a sport.
It's a game, isn't it? Controversial.
Well, yeah, because it's controversial.
Very controversial.
You know, a lot of people say women's football isn't a sport. It's a way for the nation to tackle obesity amongst young girls, encourage them to play football, and God bless them for it. But I mean, I quite enjoy it. It's not, it's a different than men's football. It's a less physical, less fast game. And
arguably more skillful.
It's not as much kicking into the crowd.
It's quite enjoyable. It's enjoyable to watch, but it's not, I wouldn't have said that the goalkeeper, I mean, she's goalkeeper as well. They're not, there is a famous quote, I can't, when somebody, I can't wish which goalie it was, but you know, the tradition now is for goalies to play the ball out. Mm-hmm. So the first, you know, the goalie starts the attack, basically. And there was some goalie.
I think it was Schmeichel starting
the corner. Yeah, it was really. So some goalie was trying to start the attack and somebody else on the, and lost the ball. And a goal was scored. And somebody said, he's a goalkeeper. He shouldn't be playing football. They're not footballers, they're goalkeepers.
A bit like refereeing. You have to have a certain psychological profile to want to be a goalkeeper. I think Louis McCarthy's goalkeeper, he's come on in the book, which is his life story, which I think is really interesting. He was a goalkeeper until he was about 15. And as he said, I love being a goalkeeper because I was attacked. A bit like refereeing.
Oh, yeah, you've got to have something wrong with you to be a referee. Some have more wrong than others, but but you've got to have a screw set of a somewhere.
Are you a sports personality fan? Did you sit?
No, I've not watched it. No, I've not watched it for years. And it's just the same old thing, isn't it? No, you
won't
invite a referee.
What,
you won't invite a referee?
No, you wouldn't invite
a referee. Well, the sport's going to be about the participants, not the referees. That's, you know, the serious for a second. It's not about the referees. So, rightly so, to be honest. No, I've never been. My dad's been in the, you know, in, I don't know if it's still been in an arena.
No, it was done that, I think it was at Salford.
My dad's been in the years when it was an arena event.
And
Leeds. Enjoyed it.
That was Leeds Arena, isn't it?
But I don't watch enough sport, I'll be honest. I just about watch two games of the league a weekend and I don't always do that. So.
I don't tell the audience that. They think you're an expert.
Well, I'm watching it all the time, obviously. You know, because I do the theatre. I very rarely get to. I usually watch something for the purposes of coming up with a joke. And Gabby Logan's microphone went. You know, which I didn't get to do this on TalkSport, so it's an exclusive. But Gabby, it's not very exclusive. But basically, because it was all the glitzy thing, it started with a bit of a DJ set by Pete Tong. And then Gabby Logan's microphone went off, and I thought, oh, it's all gone Pink Tong. thank you.
It's worth waiting.
It's worth it. Boom, tish. But there you go.
In terms of question of sport, that's now been banished to the
well.
I mean, again, does that sit alongside sports personality being an anachronism these days?
It does. It does. I mean, they could have. If they kept it going as it was with Sue Barker, I don't see why they didn't. You know, there is a lot of ageism at the BBC. I'm not just saying this from my point of view. What I'm saying is, in America, you get these guys. There was a guy called Don Imus, who's a very famous DJ, and he carried on doing his show till he was about 80 on, it was a network show in America on the radio, and did TV as well. Until he died, more or less. And in America, bizarre, and Barbara Walters is another one who did a show for ages and ages and ages. And they don't, whereas here, the BBC is a very ageist organisation. I don't know whether they're ageist, you know, because we had all the rows about, I forgot her name, but I think she did a garden show, a country father type show. And she got this, what was she called? I can't remember, but anyway. The BBC is very ageist, which is bizarre because they're so careful not to be any of the other ists, but ageist they are.
So talking of presenters of sports programme.
Yeah, why isn't Sue Barker presenting it?
Bill Clark. has stepped down from Sky Sports after 24 years.
But that would be his choice, wouldn't it?
Well, was it his choice or their choice? Well, we haven't. But that's probably a signal that they're going to change their presentation of style. Do we miss him?
Well, Phil was of one of the regular guest contributors that we've had, was always sort of had a bee in his bonnet about refereeing. But he has done a referees course. So. But I suppose like any of them, sometimes I do think they say things to be controversial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I thought he added value. I think one of the things that he probably won't be remembered for was the margin meter.
Yes,
I think it lasted a matter of weeks and it got absolutely panned on social media.
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty good, to be fair.
I think he was a good pundit. And I think the margin meter, remember the margin meter? It's one of those gimmicks they bring in from time to time. Like in cricket now, you get they tell you, there's a little graphic that tells you what the likelihood is of the team that's batting reaching the required total. And at ITV, Richard, you'll remember this, used to have the tactics truck with
Andy Townsend.
Townsend in the tactics, which was absolute nonsense. But these games don't last very long.
Depends on your favourite presenters of sport.
Of sport?
Because I know you're a consumer of sport. Wrong shape ball,
but not so much on telly, really. More radio, really. So I'm just kind of, I mean, the question of sport, you know, instantly I would turn over because...
What's the time you ever watched?
No, but to be honest, middle-aged men say making the same jokes over and over again.
Oh,
you're
not
picked
up. It's all not picked up.
You know, not really up my street.
You don't like the bounce.
I'll be, well, on question of sport, it wasn't really bounce, was it? It was
to be in league of their own?
You see, now I was quite involved when all of that sort of stuff came out. And when, you know, when I know it's old hat, but when Skinner and Badil started off doing stuff, I was actually on the committee of the Football Supporters Association many years ago. In fact, I gave Kevin's job. I was on an interview panel, interviewed Kevin.
That's your radio show, Kevin.
Yeah, well, Kevin Miles, who once did a bit of 606 and was fantastic. He got the best audience reactions, but he wasn't the main, so he never got, you know. And Kevin Miles, fantastic player.
Hey, as a Leeds United fan,
You must have
listened to Radio Leeds' coverage, which over the years, it's been unbelievable, though. We had Peter Drury, we had John Champion, we had the Welsh guy, what's he called?
Lynn Law.
John Murray.
John Murray,
correct. Right.
Well, he was at Radio Leeds with us. Oh, yeah,
fantastic. Oh, Radio Leeds was supreme in that feature. John Champion and Bryn Law. Just three of them.
Bryn Law, I think. Double Upton in
1960. Yeah, I can't remember Double Upton. It was before I moved to Leeds.
The commentator before the one that we've got now, it was nationally the good.
Yeah, it does. It's not Bryn Law. It's the other one. Yeah, that's very...
Radio Leeds has contributed loads to it. And also, if you look at Radio Yorkshire, Richard.
A fine station,
Radio Yorkshire. Mark Wilson is now doing loads of stuff for Talk Sport, where he does most of the rugby league.
He's doing the darts.
And he's doing the darts this week and does football as well.
His darts are sport. You diss snooker, but...
No, darts and snooker are great sports.
Games.
No, the sports.
I did go and see the darts, actually. I have a friend.
Monopoly is a game. No, Scrabble's a game.
I have a very, very close friend who has motor neuron disease. And when he first got diagnosed, we didn't think he was going to make it. Then about Christmas. And in fact, they had to pull him back a few times. He went downhill so quickly. So after he did make it, and that was about 6 years ago, and he's still going strong. We were out just last week, and he decided we can do loads of bucket. They have to say he's a Villa fan, so at the moment you can imagine how excited he is, because he's thinking, oh, and he's getting to all the Villa games. It's quite a feat for him to get to the games, the amount of equipment and all that kind of thing he has to go. But not long after, he decided he was going to have it on his bucket list and going to go to things he'd never been to. Went to the darts at Elland Road, right? And I have to say, it was one of the best nights.
Oh, it was a good
fantastic night.
I didn't know they'd done one
in the pavilion.
In the pavilion, yeah. And so, you know how when they all come out to their walk-on songs and they've got the music, and obviously I knew nothing about any of them, but I decided which ones I liked straight away. And I'm stood there in the queue, you know, they all walk past, and I'm stood there in the queue trying to shake their hands and getting really, really excited. And I didn't even know who they were. But what a fantastic atmosphere it was. I'd recommend it for anyone.
I went to see it at the O2, not the O2, what's it called in these? I went to see it at the First Direct Arena when it was the Darts Premier League, I think, whatever they call it. Was there a league, don't they now? Great night. Although the First Direct Arena, my advice is take your own soft drinks in with you, because it's like about a fiver through a Coke.
Try the pick and mix. It's about the year's salary for a bag of pick and mix. Yeah.
But I loved how egalitarian the dance was. Do you know what I mean? It felt like the players were really kind of connected with all the people there, and it, you know, even though they were big stars and they were having this big kind of build up as they walked out and walked through, it really felt like there was this proper connection.
I'll tell you what the most egalitarian sport is, apart from rugby league, which is the most inclusive and all that. But for egalitarianism, horse racing, if you go to...
Well, because everyone's posh?
No, well, that's that's the whole point. There's not everyone's posh at horse racing. You know, you go, you will find that there'll be people who you know are posh because they're wearing barber jackets and green wellies and all that. And they'll be mixing with the people like me, you know, who are not posh at all. And that's horse racing is a very egalitarian sport because you're at the end of the day, you're all rooting for some four-legged animal on the horse circle, so you know they're in a race. They have no idea. They know they've got to get somewhere fast, but you know.
Do you know what? I worked in a betting shop when I was a student, actually. That was everybody else was a waitress or worked behind bars or whatever, and I worked in a betting shop, which was.
Were you chalking up the odds?
No, I wasn't, just behind the tills. But it was fantastic. And actually, had I been able to do, because in those days it wasn't done in fractions, and it wasn't, they had to settle up all the things by hand. You know, they had one of those kind of old abbey machines and they'd sit in town. And had I been better at fractions, I might have even applied to go on the kind of management program when I finished college.
Could have joined Richard.
I was going to say, apart from that, all my horse racing knowledge comes from Jimmy Cooper Box. But bringing it back to sports, football, exactly, that's what I was going to say. So my new book is out, it's called Shoot.
Knocks around with
Gold Shoot with Dale Ferguson. And Dale Vince, who owns Forest Green Rovers.
And they've got this interest in football, and he's written a thriller, which is apparently exactly the same as Riders Only, where it's a horse race.
That's what she does. And she does it very well.
Yeah, she's got a program on her computer where she just says,
she writes them by hand, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Pen and paper.
The Boxing Day, the tradition of great sport. Bentley Juice playing again in this boxing day. You'll be there on the terraces.
No, I won't be there.
You won't be there.
No, I think the last time I went, I did a pitch inspection probably about 10 years ago. I didn't think I went to the game. I won't be there. We've got a family meal on Boxing Day. But Dewsbury and Bentley didn't draw each other in the cup, did they? So they won't play each other until later on in the season. So there might be a decent crowd there on Boxing Day.
Mm-hmm. Swinton Oldham is the traditional Swinton Oldham. I mean, for a while when I was growing up in the 1960s, we would play Salford on Boxing Day. But by the time we got to the 70s, Salford were way out of our league.
So I have a question for you. Because you just revealed when you used to watch rugby league.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a load of...
I've been a couple of times this season.
But when you first did. There's a load of conjecture about how lowering the tackle height will change the essence of the sport in 2025. But you will have witnessed the introduction of the limited tackle rule. Four tackles and then six. How, as a spectator, did you feel when it was mentioned to you that the game was going to change from this unlimited tackle, stick it at the jumper and roll around in the mud for as long as you could before you gave it away, to a faster version?
Well,
and different tactics. Were you in favour of that?
Very much so, because don't forget, then I was a young person. So obviously, there wasn't a stick in the mud attitudes that I've got now, you know, and I'm happily a pensioner. So, in those days, I loved the idea. Having said that, I really, one year we drew nil-nil with Widnes in the cup. And it was great. I mean, I loved it. You know, the fact that
like a thriller.
Yeah, it was nil-nil. And then in the replay, we drew 5-5 with Widnes. And then we had to play on a neutral ground. And we went to Central Park and we won 7-2. So three matches to get about 7-2.
Three trials. Yeah.
So,
but change is inevitable in rugby league, and that was a huge one.
Yeah.
But it didn't put you off being a fan.
Oh, no, far from it. I loved Swinton so much because, you know, when I first started watching, that was when Swinton won the league or in Division One 2 years in a row. First, we won Division One, I think it was 62, 63, and then we went against 63, 64. And then I think we won the Lancashire Cup in 67, and that's the end of it. Apart from promotions, we won a divisional final. And that was exciting, you know, in those days. But you know, when you achieve, especially when you move grounds, you know, I grew up at Station Road, so that's basically as much as my childhood home. Station Road was my childhood home. We moved from there to Bury, and I sort of got into it a wee bit at Bury. Well, quite a lot, actually, you know, because we were a decent sort of second division side, and I think we won a promotion. Well, you mentioned it. But then when we started moving, I think we played at Moor Lane, Salford for a little while. Now it's at Sale. But now you move to the south side of Manchester. It's never going to be the same. I mean, and I have huge admiration for Swinton fans, who are historic Swinton fans, who stuck with them. They're working quite hard, aren't they, in the community? Mm-hmm. You know more about this than I do. But they do work quite hard in the sort of community side to try and make it catch fire a bit. And so,
in terms of now you've had a chance to look at the proposals for how the game is going to change. Most of it is unarguable because it's determined by insurance premiums and contact sport and modern world. Can you understand why people might be saying, oh, it'll be the death of the sport, when actually it never will?
That was always going to happen. You can turn to social media, people will always berate something, won't they? I think, I'm not sure if the delivery of it could have been done better. But I just think it's inevitable. I think it needed probably more voices to support just Gemma Phillips and JJB from delivering that message. I think it needed something more than that. And there will be pain. There'll be pain next year because I think it's coming in at Championship and League One level, is it?
No, no? Coming in at reserve, and the community. And then 2025 Championship.
There will be pain in the short term, as they were in the trials this year, I'm sure of it. But at least they've given them a year of the professional place to, you know, to train and get used to it. And hopefully that will reduce the pain at first team level for 2025, because I think it will be difficult for the referees, from a referee's perspective, applying the stricter guidelines around the ruck. And I think they'll have a challenge on their hands, particularly depending on how hard they go with the standing of the play of the ball, attempting to play the ball with the foot rather. Without then adding on top of that those measures as well, and I think there will be some changes in any regard, with respect to foul play generally, but in relation to the tackle line, that's a big change. But I'm of the view that it was always it's inevitable, and if people look at the detail and understand it, then I think we would come to the same conclusion.
And if we do get a faster and more entertaining game, because there's more offload, because you're hitting a lower tackle area, which a great ball player can get the ball out, then it'll be quicker and it'll be more exciting. But Peg will be begging to go to hit.
I assume that initially there's going to be more stoppages because the players have taken a while to get used to it. And therefore, certainly if you're trying to plant down on anything that play the ball. That's always a problem, isn't it?
And there will be more stoppages next season anyway, because obviously they've changed the 6-a-game rule, so they've brought in penalties for 0 to 40 metres. So that will result in the stoppage of the game because of the penalty, kick to touch, etc. So that there will be more stoppages for that. There's potentially going to be more stoppages for incorrect play of the balls if players are not making the attempt to play it. And yeah, in 2025, if players haven't adjusted to tackle height, then you could see more stoppages as a result of penalties for high tackles.
Do you think football's going to change irrevocably? Because heading is obviously under this category of how often should you do it? Is it going to be a lost start? Would you bemoan the lost?
Oh, no, because I do think, you know, we're getting so much evidence through now, aren't we, about the impact of heading. And so that, you know, you can't argue with something that's now science has proven that potentially is dangerous for people. So I think you can't argue with it. I mean, for me, I just think the only thing that was wrong when we changed it was that, I can't even remember if it was the silver ball, I think. Was it the silver ball? The one where the game stopped? Remember, they did it one international court. So you had golden goal, didn't you? Where
I was seeing you.
Yeah, so there was gold, and then there was a silver one, which was the minute someone scored, the game stopped, right? And I just thought you can't introduce rules that fundamentally change the emotional response of the game, which is with football until the final whistle.
Goes.
Until the final whistle goes. You've always got to those sorts of, I mean, you know, everyone probably said something about the past back, but that was a great change, wasn't it?
That was a very good change.
Very good change.
You can imagine it changing.
For Leeds United at the time, because remember John Lucas,
you can imagine that changing at junior level. And then even perhaps in training, which is some of the things they're looking at from the league perspective, aren't they? Is it just in, you know, the rules? I mean, I was having a conversation with somebody at work around their young boy that plays the community game and plays at a certain age group that will be unaffected by the switch to tag, but there will be children that will have probably done tackling that will have to go back and do tag before they come back to tackling the game, which is
improve that skill.
Well, and I said that to them. I said my view on our community game is that we focus too much on the typical 13-a-side style game, and as a country, we don't do enough tag, we don't do enough touch. When you look at rugby league down under, I mean, touch is massive in Australia. It's on TV, and the speed and the skill that you see. I mean, players like Jai Field and Benra French,
Benji Mark,
they've come from that sort of background, light-footed, quick step, offload game, all that sort of stuff. It really is a skill. It will be that. So that will be the tag system as opposed to the touch. But
not on tag round your ankle, but you've been let out. Although there are one or two rugby league players who have that.
But when you see the good touch players playing on TV, they almost initiate the touch themselves to get a very quick play of the ball to recycle, and it's so fast. But it's all about the ball handling skills, and for me, I think some of those skills are lost by the focus being on how are we going to win the game and how are we going to make this tackle and all the rest of it. So I'd like to see the development of the basic skills, which I think it could help.
Christian Sport was rubbish. It was always rubbish. I'm convinced of that. So much so that when I looked in the Question of Sport quiz book, I could only find a couple of questions on rugby league. So instead, we got the Dickie Davies World of Sport quiz book, because of course he died this year. So it's in tribute to Dickie that we've got this book, and it has rugby league in there. And I've got a short quiz for you. Would you like to play either Where Do They Play, which none of these teams probably play where they did or do, or Nicknames of Clubs?
Well, I'll say Where Do They Play? Because I don't know if you say the Boulevard, no problem.
Yeah, this is a history quiz as well.
It's from 1982. So,
the year before I was born, okay,
You've heard of the Beatles, James. You know, they were before you were born, you know. So, cool. Number one, Castleford,
Weldon Road
is the correct answer. Number two, Featherstone Rovers,
Post Office.
Three, St. Helens,
Knowsley Road.
Four, Batley.
Mount Pleasant.
Five, Doncaster.
Ooh, now
they played a two round, didn't they?
1982, Doncaster.
Tattersfield.
I was going to say Tattersfield because I went to Tattersfield and that would have been in the early 90s.
Where did they move to from Tattersfield?
But they played at the football ground after that, so that would have been, what road would that have been? Something, you know, was it?
Bellevue. Doncaster. Bellevue, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tattersfield, what a fantastic name that is.
Yeah, it was Tatty.
It was.
You have a dog?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, Bellevue,
Bellevue
on dog
track,
didn't it?
Sheffield and
Howard. There is a dog track in Doncaster, but I don't know where it is compared to where Tattersfield was. Halifax.
Brumhall.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Brumhall.
Now, he was mentioned earlier. I think the most famous resident of this place was mentioned earlier in the podcast, but and I always get the pronunciation wrong. Heighton.
Heighton. No, forgotten.
Old Park.
Warrington.
Wilderspool.
CBRE Sandringham Ground.
Really?
Yeah, the old ground. It's been demolished finally.
The snooker club still there. Is it gone? Widnes.
Norton Park.
Wigan.
Central Park.
Now we're Tesco. Let's do the nicknames because these are very much things of their time, some of these. We'll see what we've got. Let's go. Number one, the Villagers.
Bramley. Absolutely.
Number two, the Early Birds. Black and White is a rubbish nickname, isn't it? It's just generic. Three, the Gallant Youths.
But it can't be Early Birds.
Well, no. The Gallant Youths.
I'm going to say that before I even start the quiz, but you've mentioned their ground.
Was it
Battley?
Yeah. Yeah. Since...
How
did people still say that?
That's
really
old,
isn't it? That's what they were asked. Manchester
City's nickname is the Citizens, but whoever calls Manchester City, the Citizens.
What's it now?
The Mummy?
The Loiners. Boo.
Oh,
Ruffians.
Lions.
Hey, Swinson.
Not the Lions.
The Glass Blowers.
That'll be St. Helens.
Castleford.
Is it Castleford?
Yeah,
that was
Castleford. Glass.
So why that? What's the explanation for that?
It was renowned for its glass.
What was it?
Castleford.
Was it?
The Dreadnoughts.
Great. In deference to your good self.
I mean, they should... long believed.
Is that way? Yeah. What's that?
Why are they called the Dreadnoughts?
After the HMS Dreadnought.
Ah, right.
Long is my belief that Danny Cole should be replaced by a bloke dressed as a big ship wandering around the pitch, but we're going to the new owner, see if we can get that sorted. Robins. Oh, that's easy.
Robins Poker.
Still are, yeah.
And the Wires.
Warrington.
I mean, in fairness, you know, mentioning darts and other sport, it is in here. And this is a wonderful selection of sports that probably were on ITV at one point. Fencing, greyhound racing. Of course, there's plenty of horse racing in there. Ice hockey, ice skating, motor racing, shooting, water polo. We don't know how many times that was on World of Sport. Tenpin bowling, trampolining, yachting. You know, you don't get that on... question of sport, do you with?
Cliff diving was the famous one from World of Sport. 1 o'clock on World of Sport, where you got the first, you know, before the racing started and whatever, you've got everything. They had that thing where they drove, they had a lot of truck based sports from America. Basically, anything that had been on the wide world of sports in America was, you know, was played on World of Sport.
And of course, the wrestling.
And the wrestling was at 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any wrestling questions in there, which is quite surprising. But I guess, you know, sport.
This is like playing Trivial Pursuit with your family. You have to play Trivial Pursuit with the caravan back in, you know, as a kid. But the entertainment questions were no longer entertainment, they were history.
We just needed 12 advocates before we even did that.
Have we got anything to promote before we end this Christmas extravaganza?
There's a new magazine. Well, I say new, it's been out nearly a week, but new magazine out. Perfect to sit by the fireside with your eggnog.
Yeah. And, I should ask Marty, what should I watch over Christmas? Now I've got no idea what to write about in the column next month.
It's a problem now. It used to be great. I was at every Christmas when I was doing it for The Guardian. I used to write about Cliff Richard's Christmas tennis tournament because of Sky. It's actually just fun to go to Sky Sports on Christmas Day. At least it used to be. I don't know whether it's say the same now. Obviously, with more American sports, they actually play on Christmas Day. But you always find something bizarre on Sky. Who's watching Sky Sports 3 on Christmas Day or whatever it's called? You know, TNT, there'll be, or racing. There's no racing on Christmas Day. So you'll probably find some bizarre race meeting from South Africa or something on the Sky Sports Racing Channel. So, that's all you'll find fancy right about, Richard.
That's disappointing. Phil, are there copies of Martin's book available?
There are one or two. As we always say, it's now available in no good bookshops, apart from this one that we're sitting in now. That's the only place.
Well, we have more than one.
Yeah. As I was saying, Peg, I went into Waterstones in Wakefield and said, I'm a local author. Why don't you stock a few copies of my book? I said, I'll come and sign them or something. They'll sell a few copies, I reckon, not many, but they'll sell a few. And the guy, they said, some 12-year-old who was looking after it. He was allegedly the manager of the shop. And he said, well, get in touch with our regional people because they decide. So I sent an email to the email address that he sent me. And I said, look, I live in Wakefield. I can wander down to your shop, sign a few copies. A few people know me in Wakefield. Okay, I get stopped in a coffee house in Wakefield or whatever. And he said, oh, Martin Carr, a big fan. He said, oh, I'm a huge fan. I used to read you in The Guardian every week. Always listen to your fighting talk when you're on, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, great. He said, but they won't stop. They won't stop. They won't stop your book because you're not famous enough. Or it's not about cookery. Or there's no murders in it.
So your next book's going to be about cooking and murder.
Cooking and murder. That's exactly it.
Just on the I
couldn't book. No, I mentioned this to Richard.
They fixed it.
To the bottom.
You can vote now, they fixed it.
Right, some assumed names.
Yeah.
I'm getting rid of my friend. I've got the guy in Waterstones
to vote. Peg, have you got anything you'd like to promote on this exciting podcast?
I've got another podcast, which...
There's not enough podcasts out there. I mean, until Jay Comfrey invented them, I don't know what people did.
But unfortunately, we're not award nominated at all. But
it's only a matter of time.
But I do a podcast with... Actually, it all came out of Martin's radio show when you were on Radio Bates FM. What was the actual thing?
Yorkshire Radio,
okay.
Radio Yorkshire.
There was a big legal case, and you have to call it Radio Yorkshire, otherwise Ken Bates gets sued.
It was Radio Yorkshire, okay, or Bates FM, which is what we said. And so I came down onto your show. I met your good friend Phil Turner in the radio studio. And then Phil sent me a message afterwards saying, do you fancy doing a podcast? And literally the first episode we did was only the third time we'd ever met. And me and Phil have now done quite a lot of episodes of this podcast, and it's very imaginatively called Peg and Phil, You Spin Me Right Round. And we talk quite a bit of nonsense, stories, this and that about, we say it's an 80s music podcast and a sort of alternative 80s music podcast, but actually we cover loads of different decades, really. With loads of stories of the band, stories of what was going on, stories of people we've met, this and that about the songs, yeah? So our last episode, I think, we covered everything from Orange Juice and Edwina Collins to The Proclaimers to, what's she called? Michelle Collins, who was Cindy in EastEnders sleeping in my bed. Not when I was in it, but I tell the story about that, which is linked to Marion Wilson. And loads of other things in between. So there you go. Listen to that if you want to waste half an hour.
Have you ever had someone famous sleep in your bed, but not when you're there? Sounds like a great radio topic, but I don't know how much
you should know. The whole podcast, who slept in your bed?
Who slept in my bed, but not when I was there? Yeah.
People, thank you. for your time this Thursday.
Carol Borden was slept in his bed when he wasn't there.
And she, you can't escape from her now. She's everywhere.
Is she more famous than Michelle Collins? Probably now.
Very famous.
She's very famous.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's
strictly accurate. Just in, you know, for legal reasons, she's not on my bed. As opposed to in
Amazon. And that clip of her as Cher on Stars in Their Eyes, you know, that was... I don't want to go there.
Oh, do you know what? That's not fair, because if I ever went and Stars in the Eyes, I'd even have to do Cheryl Kirsten McCall, and she's already, so if she's already done Cheryl, I'll have to take Kirsten McCall. Which is no hardness at all.
Helping King is such a name that.
Crazy Boss. You know the Helping King is crazy? Children's
Baby.
They were the...
Were you there?
Poor man smoking around.
No, I don't remember. I thought
they observed me from my bed.
So they looked all sleeping your bed.
No, but they were poor man's walking wise, but not as poor as my companion answers. I did an OB with Bernie Winters and Schnorbitz.
Wow, fantastic.
In the early days of Radio N, we did a thing at it must have been a contract deal, but we did a thing at a car showroom down Kirkstall Road, and it was Radio Air plus Bernie Winters and Schnorbitz. So how about that? There's a showbiz story to die for.
The glamour of
80s
local radio.
It's, it was. Some of the things we spotted were ridiculous. We did a thing where we did an OB, and again it was a contra deal with somebody who was building some new houses, sort of Workley or somewhere like that. And Alex Lester, who was my colleague in the early days of the video, I went to do middle of the night at Radio 2. But Alex had to do this OB in the middle of a Saturday afternoon with about three people in front of him. And he had all the, you know, disco double decks and all those sort of bloody things. And he, I think at some point while the record was playing and somebody was staring at him, he said, "Look, why don't you fuck off?"
Have you got a gig on Radio
2? Have you got Radio 2? I'll tell you.
Have you ever tried?
What? Being on Radio 2? Yeah, I was on Radio 2 for a number of years. Yeah.
Being forthright with your audience?
Not as much as Alex was famously bad tempered, but a lovely, lovely guy. But he could be bad tempered with the listeners. But he got into trouble. I'll tell you exactly what he was trying to say. See if I can remember this. He was on, he was saying something on Radio 2 about a do he'd been to. And it was one of those standing up do's where you put your little canopy or whatever on it and everything. And there was peanuts and things there. And somebody, he told this story about being approached by somebody who was quite big at Radio 2 and making a fool of himself. Because he said, at the time, I had a mouthful of peanuts. And somebody wrote in and said, "I don't expect to hear such filth on Radio 2 at 3 o'clock in the morning." And we had to reply, "No, a mouthful of peanuts." I've probably told the story slightly wrong, but...
I think we've got
it. It's good.
Christmas, it's all about, you know, peanuts. Apparently. I'm going to have to put the explicit tag on the podcast now. That'd be great. I mean, that'll get us more listeners because they'll think there's lots of swearing and stuff.
Yeah. So the only other thing I would say is that when it gets to the new year, I have this fantastic, but this is my one rugby league story, okay? So I'm going
Yes.
It's the only one I've
got. We're going to end on a high.
So, yeah, so I was asked to go and be roving reporter, which is what I've done mainly for BBC Radio News at the Rob Burrow Marathon earlier this year. And I was there from 6 a.m. And, you know, right from the start, it was really emotional. I was into Andrew Everett's show, you know, Andrew, fantastic presenter. And I kind of pretty much cried a little bit through most of my lives that I've done all morning. And the longer we went on, the more emotional it got. So when it got to the end and it was about, 3 o'clock or whatever time it was, when Rob and Kevin Sinfield were coming back into the stadium. You can imagine, quite tired, emotional, being there all day. I was the only live broadcaster, broadcasting live. It's just on a little iPhone. I had to try and push between people because I'm only small and there were lots of people stood in front of me. And I managed to be talking live on the radio, the only person at the moment at which they crossed the finishing line, when Kevin Sinfield picked up Rob and carried him over the line, which was one of the moments of 2023, wasn't it? If the moment of 2023. And of course, I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I burst into tears on the air again because I just thought it was one of the most beautiful things that I've ever seen. So for me, when it gets to, you know, again, it gets to the end of the year and everybody shares their, you know, what's been the highlight of the year. I mean, I think that was the moment of the year anyway, and it certainly made me incredibly proud that I was in live broadcaster there. And any excuse to burst into tears on air, really.
That's not so total lack of professionalism. You're supposed to be a professional.
On an offshoot, CBEs, what a load of nonsense. Give them nightlets or don't bother.
Absolutely, I think that's what the rumours, CBEs. They are terrible. Absolutely.
You've got an MBE or an OBE, what's the difference? You know.
I did once, so this is another stuff, but I once went to Buckingham Palace and my dad, when he got a CBE, and I was about 14 and I had a Mohican, and my mum made me buy a hat to wear because she was so embarrassed that I was going to go with this Mohican. So I went off and I bought this, she made me buy a proper outfit to go. So I went and bought this kind of very, quite nice grey outfit. And I bought this little grey beret and I said, it's all right, mum, I've got a hat to wear. And of course, what I did was I managed to back home all this orange fringe. So I've got this little grey beret on in the pictures and this big, massive orange fringe stuck out the front of it in front of Buckingham Palace for a health program.
Yeah. Well, those of us of a certain generation didn't have a CBE, but we had a CBN.
Yeah. More use than CBE, to be quite honest.
On that political note, then, I think we're done, Phil, for the year. And James is now on board, which is exciting. That's why we got nominated for awards now.
So, looking forward to Boxing Day, though, when Leeds take on Wakefield. Will you be there watching your boys?
No, can you get us a programme? Because I don't want to pay a fiver on eBay.
Consider it.
Thank you. It's all the important things. Phil, thank you for the year. James, thanks for joining us. Worthy addition to the team. Martin, thank you for coming in. Peg, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. And you know, fingers crossed, Phil sorts a book out for you. And who's going to eat that mince pie? That's the question.
Oh, we got one each, don't worry.
Oh, that's all right. I don't like them, so it's so fine. Sod you. Sports Social Podcast Network.